Similar situation, I guess, for Nick Petén then, in that he might maybe even take the pregame skate to be on standby?
Correct.
Is Dustin a case of sort of close but no cigar for tonight?
Well, he's ready to play. He'd like to play. I just want to hold him out one more. He's had almost a block of 5 weeks off. He did skate during the All-Star break, but yesterday was his first practice. I'm not concerned. We're not concerned about the injury or where it's at. It's all the other things, groins, hip flexors, that when you don't get to push at a high level for a long period of time, because he's not coming back in at 12 minutes. Right, he's coming back in at 20-plus minutes, and he's got to be ready to go. So we wanted to get him another skate today, get him a skate tomorrow, and then he'll go in Montreal.
Just on Nikolaj Ehlers, how close might he be to taking part in a practice?
I think we are 7 days away from that, possibly, but he's coming on the trip. So he's back into the part now where the conditioning and some of the ice works gets handed over to the coaches. And then he's got more of a defined window. He's not playing until a certain date, and then we're kind of moving toward that now.
And just on, I know you were asked yesterday about coaching your 1,500th game tonight, but a little extra special in that it comes against a good friend on the other side of the bench there?
Completely more special because of that. Pete DeBoer and I started our coaching career together in 1993. I'd say I hired him as an assistant, but I didn't. It was my first year. I was 26. We coached together. He was in law school at the time. We had a major junior team, a junior team, seven minor teams, a rink and a restaurant. It was all part of the job that I had. So Pete and I kind of split the hockey together. We were roommates, ex-teammates for juniors, so he would be at that time as close a friend as I had. I got a lot of really nice texts over the last week, but his was the one that I'll cherish and appreciate it very much. So as long as we win, I'm really happy he's here. So that went back and forth a little bit, but here, you know what, your personality is what it is, right? And then you learn and grow, and we've probably both, and in talking to him, we've both given up more control for the right reasons and used the people around us a whole lot better. What Pete was good at is if there were four problems on the board, he could pick the one that was the real problem and then spend no time worrying about the other three. My personality is more, you know, I'm pretty good at picking out the problem, but I'm still going to worry about the other three. He's very clean in terms of figuring out what's wrong, what needs to be fixed, and then not burning a lot of emotion about the other things. And I think that makes him a really strong leader because you can sense that. He can walk into a room and say, we're going to work on this. This is a problem. We need to get this right. And you believe him. He's had that right from the time he was 17 years old. He could define the issue. I don't want to take all your time, but the best example, back in the OHL, you used to do the schedule, all the general managers in one room, and just grind a schedule out, right? Like, it was a full 2-day event, and there was a lot of hate in the room by the end. And it was my first year, and he's with me. We're driving home from that, and I'm looking at a stretch of the schedule, and I'm saying to him, I'm pretty sure that this is the worst block of games in the history of hockey, right? I don't know. We went from Sault Ste. Marie to Newmarket. We played like 5 games in 7 nights. It was horrible. It was my inexperience, right? He says, don't worry about it. We're probably going to win them all. So that's Pete's strength, right? He wasn't worried about that. We were 7 out of 8 points on that. And it was still a horseshit schedule. He was wrong. It was a terrible schedule, but he had figured out it really didn't matter. So that was what our car rides were like.
Staying on the trend of 1,500, Paul, I mean, given the trend towards young players, what did your time in the American League mean to you, or what are some of the things you can draw on from that experience in dealing with?
Well, that year was really important because I started to understand what those guys go through when they don't get called up. When their number's not picked, and as the coach, you're down there going, well, yeah, he's our best player, but you, having had NHL experience, I always understand why you didn't get called up. So that, I have certainly more empathy for Pascal Vincent and what he goes through and the job that he's done there, understanding that struggle from the American League to the NHL. And when these kids come up, And that's certainly don't think that it's made me easier on them, but I'm certainly aware of what they're going through. I also know they have to get past that, right? Past that fear threshold of making a mistake to going out to becoming a bona fide NHL player. But that, having been able to coach in major junior, then in the American League, even though it was for a year, to the NHL, has made me at least understand what those kids go through.
How does having your AHL team close by ameliorate?
Well, there's a bunch more pieces to it. We still don't see them play a whole lot because our schedule's offset when we're on the road and they're at home. But Pascal Vincent was on my staff here, and we worked very closely and quite well together. So that relationship is good. I get to talk about his guys all the time. We see each other once or twice a week when we're in town, and we go through that list. So they also get to tell them what we're working on. Right, this is the video that we're showing. These are our problems with the Jets now, and he gets to kind of steal that or take that, and he's a really interesting, smart guy, so I steal as much from him as I can on when he's teaching a piece of our game. We run the same systems. He has to teach it differently because it's a different level and it's a more basic level, but a lot of times it's a better way to teach, so we steal a lot from Pascal.
Just one more on Pete, but it almost could have happened last season. Have you guys spent any time sort of wondering together what a playoff series between you and him might look like?
Well, we've threatened, over the years, but we wouldn't talk to each other, not at all, not from the start to the finish. Very close friends. I'd love to see him win the Stanley Cup as long as we had won more, right? So you're still, for anybody that's played on a team together, so a junior team, and you spent 2 or 3 years together, you're like the best of friends. But there's a constant competition about everything, whether it's ping pong, I don't care what it is. There's that. So Pete and I have always had that competition with each other, but not, it's kind of not something we're talking about. We're not putting records up against. It's just I'd really like to beat him.
So when you win that game late last month, or December, do you talk to him right after the game, or do you stay
away? No, we were. That was Christmas, right? We were off to Van, and we end up running it. We end up running into each other after the game, and I apologize for what we did to the game of hockey. We I don't know what game it was, but we played in San Jose either the end of last year or the year before, and we met at the front of the buses. It was toward the end of the year, and both agreed that it was probably the worst game of hockey that had ever been played, right? It was just our teams have a tremendous amount of speed on both sides and lots of confidence. So the game kind of ebbs and flows where one team just controls. But the goals that are scored against, if you line them up, they're almost inexplicable. Like Nick Ehlers had a hat trick last game and there wasn't a goalie in the net on any of his shots. I'm not sure he shot the puck into the net either on any of them. He makes for good video. Okay. Oh, sorry. You said you weren't asking a question today, right? Okay.
Your fourth line, what have you seen from the
postgames? Well, I'm going to do this in two levels. One, Lemieux and Appleton have more time in the NHL and are just getting better. But where that line changed was when Andrew Kopp went to center ice on it. So now you've got a real strong face-off man. Andrew is one of those guys that we would have shown very little video to from the time he got here. He just watched the main group and got it. Right, he just gets it, so he also can work with those two guys. There's enough hands there that they can score. They all play a similar game. Like, there's not going to be a lot of curl-ups. There's not going to be a lot of backhand sauce passes, but it'll be straight line direct. And they all have hands. Like, both those wingers were prolific before they got here, right? They can put points up, but not in a Nick Ehlers style of game. It's a kind of they can grind goals and get to the net heavy and do those kind of things. But when Andrew's there, I can play them more. They play more, they get more confidence, they define their game more every time they get out in the ice. They simplify, get faster, get quicker. So the wings have gotten better, but Andrew Kopp has been, for me, the reason that it's gone.